Marhaba, namaste, adab, ni hao, hola, and welcome back to the second episode of Desi Talk with Gen Box. This is your charming genie reporting from outside her bottle, and with me is the ever so mysterious and the progenitor of all things mind-blowing, the Great Box.
Hi, genie.
Hello.
Thank you for that intro. I love listening to the way you introduce me every time.
I love it too. Introducing you to our audience. They must know that you are the progenitor of all magnificent things and all those mysterious mysterious boxes you will unravel.
Right. So and against all expectations, we are actually doing a second episode of this.
Which is just surprisingly awesome because I don't think we could have managed all the technical challenges after our first episode that we will do a second episode. And I think we are brave people now. I think we can manage this.
We have gotten over the worst embarrassment, I suppose. So yeah, let's dive into this episode 5 of
Sanjay. So what do you have for us? Yes, what do you have for us for the second episode?
Okay, so I think we got a good glimpse of Edda and Serkan's possible future, right? I think that's what this whole Antalya interlude was about. What Edda and Serkan could be if they actually, you know, acted on their feelings. These are budding feelings. If they acted on their feelings and actually crossed that line to turn this into an actual relationship, what would they be like? So we got a glimpse into that. And it was interesting. I would say episode 4 was much more of a classic rom-com episode, which made it a lot more fun, obviously, because there was a lot of comedy. Episode 5 was very different in tone, but also we have to remember it was shot in Antalya, which is such a beautiful place, by the way. Oh my God. The prettiest episode we have gotten so far.
I can't believe I haven't been there. I was just telling someone that I need to be there. That's the first place I want to visit after all this is over.
Yeah, the first thing, though, I was so jealous because I have been stuck in my apartment for all these months. And look at these people swimming in the sea and everything. Oh my God, I got so jealous. There's no pandemic in Daisy World, and that's what I am loving currently, I think, the most. That there's no pandemic, no masks in sight, everyone is just chill, which is
so normal.
Yeah, dream world, truly. So, what did you think about the episode?
I have mixed feelings, but overall, I agree with you. It did a lot to show us what will happen if these two actually cross the line. It also showed us how these two work in tandem, how dependent they have become on each other for various things, mostly to, you know, air out their thoughts and the companionship they have. Like, it was more evident in case of Serkan than Edda, maybe. But even she is looking for that, I don't know, comments, the appreciation, and she waits for his reactions, be it on her clothes, on her work, on just everything she does. His little actions mean a lot to her, while for him, just having her around him, whether she's doing anything or whether she's not doing anything, doesn't matter. She needs to be before his eyes, and that tells a lot where they both have reached as far as their characters are concerned. And it will be interesting. The crossing the line thing hasn't crossed their minds. They are doing it subconsciously, and it was very evident in this episode. I really like that they have made that little progression where they are starting to air out, you know, or maybe express it more, what they want from each other while flirting with that line. But still, they are both holding on to that line thing, you know, that.
Yeah, there's that safety net of the contract and Celine and Ferit. And everything. There's always a safety net. Yeah. And they are sort of circling around each other within that space all the time.
Yeah. Edda actually mentioned somewhere now to him that don't be cold to me after being all soft and talking to me, letting me inside and having these conversations. Don't turn and be cold again. I can't bear that. That line was probably a throwaway in that scene, but it made a lot of impression where they both have, you know, made strides in terms of characters. That was great.
Yes, and I like that she sees that in him and is open with him about it, and he tacitly acknowledges that. Like, I think Sarkhan as a character is made that way, right? He's not overt about his feelings, but I think he's a man of action. So whether it is Edda's scholarship, he will refuse to admit it aloud that he made a mistake there. That's from the first episode we have seen. He refuses to admit that he has made a mistake. But we can see that discomfort and that guilt in his every time Edda brings it up. So you can always see that, and you can see how he's trying to make up for it by boosting her confidence, by recommending her work to other people, by telling everyone how talented she is. So he is clearly, this is his way of trying to make up for that loss in her life. And even with this when Edda told him that don't be cold to me after sharing something with me, he did not immediately revert back. And I think the way the episode ended, it showed us that he's not the same man we saw a couple of episodes ago. He has, there has been development. Even if we don't immediately notice it in his behavior, his actions will prove that to you, that he has moved forward, even if it's an inch.
If it's only him disagreeing with this this whole character progression, it's only in his head that he's trying to refute all these feelings, all that, what she means to him. And he keeps trying to do that. Like, that is why he always brings Celine back into the equation, or even by telling, while talking to that old man, he kept on refusing to name whatever these two share. And, you know, he refused to accept that this can be love or whatever it is. I'm very unsure about him. He said something very, he mentioned that he plans everything, right? Like, they were both talking to each other, and he says that I plan everything, every detail and every action. And she is obviously the impulsive one who just flows with whatever she wants to do. And at that point, I thought he has not done anything that he has planned in this entire series. Like, he didn't plan to make her his fiance till, you know, Celine started poking. And he has not planned anything. He's just also flowing. I don't know why he keeps saying that he plans and acts on those things. I think something needs to happen to make him realize that he can't plan Edda needs to do something, or maybe move out, or move, you know, just because at this point she's doing whatever he's saying. You know, if he says leave it in front of me, she'll be there. If it's about his work, she'll just follow around. I mean, I know we are going to talk about this in some other context later, but I just get this feeling that, you know, I just want to see this, that something happen here where Edda, you know, says it'll be fine. You can handle this. I'm not going to be around here, or I'm not going to do this. I just want to see how he reacts to that. I think
you did get the feeling, like, even early on in the episode, because like she was away from him for, I think, a little bit of time. That one meeting, that first meeting with the old couple that they had, Edda was not there for that scene. And then immediately the next scene we see is she's coming, and then he complains to her why she has not been around him the entire morning, and how she's not holding up her end of the contract. And clearly that is not the reason why, because there was no opportunity to make Celine jealous there. He missed her, and I guess that is Sarkhan Bolut's way of saying he missed her. So we clearly see that he gets a little jittery when she's not around. So it should be interesting where this takes the character in the future. But speaking of Celine, we started the episode with that dinner scene, right? Which, I don't know, that whole contract thing, couldn't they come up with an a more plausible excuse?
I was like, just make an excuse, just say it.
Like they squandered the momentum from last episode after the 2 week break.
It was just a love contract. I was like, please don't end it like this. Come on, give me some meat here, some conversation. And it was just an excuse.
And then he kind of blamed Edda for it, which I don't get, because like Edda said, she's not the only one who signed the contract. In fact, the contract was his idea. And it was in his house. It was his copy of the contract which she came across. So shouldn't he take some responsibility for it? Instead, he piles on everything, the, you know, stress of the entire day to her, which is not done at all. So, yeah, that was weird. But anyway, I guess they had to move the whole action to Antalya as soon as possible. So, Celine and Ferit, we saw a lot of Ferit this episode, didn't we? Much more than usual.
I was like, please just go away.
I don't mind him that much. I mean, I can think of other characters that I would rather see, because Ferit is part of the core action, so it's okay. But we see Edda's empathy with Ferit developing in this episode, right? Which is interesting, because...
And she actually compared him with Sarkan in one incident.
Yeah, because they are very different kinds of lovers. And I think Edda is beginning to see what made Celine leave Sarkan. She has not questioned so far what is the scene there, like why she left him, or why he wants her back, or why he's manipulating things to get her back. But I think now that she is beginning to see how Ferit is... with Celine, she is beginning to question what the dynamic is there, which is interesting, because I think there will be a bond of empathy in the future between these two, because they are going to be left out in the cold, right? That's the whole contract. When the relationship ends, that means Celine and Sarkan get together, and both Ferit and Edda are left in the cold. So I see an empathy between these two.
She'll be guilty as well.
I hope Sarkan is the only one with guilt in this whole, you know, mess. Because
being Edda, she's going to feel bad that this guy was so in love with, you know, Celine, and all that happened because of her. Because if she was not part of this contract, Celine and Ferit would have been married and happy, and maybe, I don't know, but this Ferit,
but I guess
this
guilt should,
of taking the picture, I was like, what are you doing?
That's just dumb plotting, I guess. Yeah. I mean, the whole episode, I think, was a bit of awkward plot-wise, because they introduced all these. Clearly, it was just to, you know, get that grand ending at the end for us to, you know, swoon over, which was, I get it. But to get to that place, they went through a lot of awkward loopholes, I would say. And the editing, there were editing issues also. Yeah. The choppy editing did not help. Yeah. But then again, it was an outdoor shoot, and I guess there are technical issues and everything, so we can, and let's be honest, we have seen way worse, Jeannie.
We have.
So we can let this go.
We can't say much.
We have no authority.
It would have made more sense for Celine, because Celine is the sly one, she's the one who's jealous and with all these emotions. It would have made more sense for her to leak into some PR or some media person who again, you know, relays the information.
Yeah,
to
but then
and
I think they are trying to show her character, like she is
not
sly.
Evil.
She is not evil. I don't think that's the intention here. Like they want her to be conflicted about this. She's clearly jealous, and the jealousy is making her catty with Edda. But otherwise, she seems to be a nice person. But when it comes to Sarkan, there are unresolved feelings with Sarkan, obviously, and the jealousy is not helping. But she doesn't seem to be a bad person. And the whole, you know, bitchy thing with Edda is out of jealousy. And I guess to some extent, she doesn't want to leave Ferit. She knows that he's a good man and he doesn't deserve this. But then she can't help herself. Or at least I think that's what they're trying to go for here. It's not always pleasant to watch, I guess. But I can take it for now. So yeah, that is, I think, mostly the impression I got.
Okay, the first scene we got of Sarpan and Nada after the dinner and in Italia was in the room where she's trying all the clothes. It was fun. Yeah. It was fun.
It was this whole pretty woman kind of montage, which was really fun to watch. And you know what? We should talk about all the stylist, you know, big fashion that we got to see in
Instagram.
The episode at the end of this one.
We will
do a short segment on that maybe. So because
but
I have no idea
reaction.
What was going on. But yeah, his reactions were very funny.
Instagram
and the fact that he actually sat there through all of it and you know, clearly gave his opinion.
Yeah.
He was very opinionated on what she should and shouldn't get. That tells you a lot because I think through this entire episode and even the previous episode, we can see how natural they are around each other. Like they are in each other's faces all the time and yet they're very natural. It's like watching an old married couple who are bickering all the time.
That's their dynamic.
Putting
all those accessories on him, taking the pictures. Like, can you imagine Sarpan Bola letting anybody but her do all these things to him? Like, Celine would never dare. That's where the contrast comes in. She will never dare.
Celine would also, she is not the type of character to, I guess, do all that.
But he will also, he's also someone who might just.
But then, you know what, Jeannie? The thing is, in this episode, the lines were a bit blurred, I thought, between, you know, when we saw the characters being the characters and when it was just the cast having fun, it got a little hard to tell sometimes.
In the
beach scene and the volleyball scene, it just looked like the cast fun. So I guess we should not really, I mean, I at least don't really think of it as, you know, important to the characterization as such. So yeah, and speaking of the other characters, what do you think of this new development with Mello and Sarkan's dad?
I don't know. I mean, see, Sarkan's dad had this interesting conversation with Nada in episode number 2, right? During that party or before that party. He was nice to her. He seems like a nice old man. But he's also someone who tries to test his son, you know? Nice dad, nice being the nice guy, but he tests his son. Like, he knows his son will get rattled with Ferit in the company, and he always keeps on saying things about Khan, you know, and just ignore him, or he's not his father, or whatever. He's like his father, and all these statements. So he knows that Khan is someone who troubles his son, but he lets it be. I just find it very fishy, and they have introduced him to Mello, right? Which means now Mello is close to him, as we have talked previously, as well as with Khan, two people who Sarpan hates, and she is now involved with Sarpan's business. So whatever happens in the
there's
end,
a mess waiting to happen there.
Because the mess is just being building up, and you know, with Khan.
And also, I think there's also there's a story in Edda's past which they don't want to come out. Because did you see in the dinner scene with Edda's aunt and Sarpan's parents, when there was a question about where they come from, which part of Madin, there was a lot of discomfort in the way she answered that. She was very wishy-washy about her whole answer.
And Mello wanted to spill everything.
Exactly, because she's that kind of person, right? She's, you know, the naive dreamer sort of person who doesn't have a filter. They clearly said that she doesn't have a filter. So something is going to happen there with Edda's past, whatever it is. We don't know what happened back then. And that is not something which Edda and her aunt want to come out.
Mello might,
and it is interesting that the people now getting close to her are both sort of circons, and you know, they are not, they don't have a good equation with circon Khan, and
they will use that information to play with circon.
Something is, yeah, there is a huge mess waiting to happen there. So I don't know how long they will take.
I mean, I see the build and I see the use why they're using Mendel, but I just don't like the way they are doing it. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was the editing, but this time it made it so jarring. I don't know.
Yeah, the editing was really choppy this episode because it kept shifting. Yeah, it kept shifting weirdly. And what was that about Engin and Piril? I don't even know what was
going on. I don't want to talk. I don't know what
there. There is nothing to talk about because we don't. We have no idea what was going on there.
I was like, why? And at that point, I was like, oh my god, there is no way we are doing episode 2. There is no way Box is going to like this. This episode is going to suck majorly.
Yeah, but when you sent me your first message after watching, you were, I could see the, you know, fear with which you had warned me. You actually warned me, like, okay, watch it, you know, stick with it.
That's
the silver lining. It gets better, and I did not mind the episode as such. That's what I would say. Even the first bits, I mean, I was just watching the scenery. I would like, it was a very nice touristy sort of part, which, and I mean the sights were gorgeous, cinematography was excellent, so I enjoyed watching all that. So it was a good escape. But then speaking of the second part, okay, so the favorite scenes, we know what the good ones, the really, you know, the ones with all the meat, the temple scene. It starts from where they visit the temple of Apollo and the whole conversation under the stars and everything.
But I like the scene before that.
Oh, yes. Edda's eyes. Oh, man. That was so cute. Edda is such an adorably evil, manipulative person. And she's so adorable about the whole thing. You know who she reminds me of? Edda?
I have no idea.
You have no idea, Jeannie?
No,
you don't know who she reminds me of?
No. I have no idea. Okay, I mean, that's what Edda would tell you. She will never confess that she uses all those tricks to get the things she wants.
But we know. Yeah.
We know all her ways. And, you know, I really love the way it was shot right from her light suit. It was so playful, so childish, and so cute. And then the way she walks, that's exactly the kind of behavior a person wants. And, you know, wants things done.
You would know a lot about that show. Sure.
She kept lingering, and then when he says, no, you're not coming. And she's like, okay, fine, I'm not coming. And
yeah, it was a master class in reverse psychology and, you know, all these cutesy wiles. Really, I was so impressed.
I was like, oof, yes, girl, this is me. Go, get it. And it was shot so beautifully. The softness that was missing, you know.
All
that,
the scenes in the room, even on the night before that, soft. Yeah, they were shot really softly. They looked so pretty. Everything was so pretty. It was really nice. And then obviously the temple scene comes in. And okay, so what about that? We are discussing this. What about
Siddhe, right? Where the temple is located. Siddhe, and the temple was first, I think, Athena's before Temple of Apollo was erected, or southern
it is
coast
incomplete
of
I think that's what Circon mentioned, that it was, the building of the temple was never completed. That's what he mentioned in the episode. And and then he narrates the story of, I mean, both of them narrate different aspects of the story of Apollo. And that was interesting, actually, because I think the writer there combined two or three different myths of Apollo to, you know, make that one romantic story about this woman who waits for him and turns into a flower. So it was, she combined two or three, because Apollo is not the most appealing of the Greek deities, let's say. We'll come to that later, I think. But that conversation in its entirety, the way they shared little tidbits from their past, serious about serious, and then mellow. It was very nice, and it was, I think, one of the closest moments we have seen between them so far. Now, it also tells you a lot about the people these two are, because they are two very strong personalities. They deal with life in different ways, but here are very two strong personalities who are very protective about the people in their lives. So I think Sirkin telling us, I mean, that scene was so touching, man, when he tells us that Sirius was a rescue and how, you know, he had to nurse him back from, he had to nurse his wounds, and that's why he's the only. That also tells you a lot about Sirkin's character, because, you know, like we said before, Sirkin and Sirius are basically kindred souls. Yeah. So Sirkin's story is, I think, very similar. And Edda, I think there is a sort of protective aspect to whatever is there in her past. She clearly, Mello, I don't know whether it was Mello or whether it was her aunt, whichever, whoever it was, something happened with her mysterious grandmother, and she clearly hates her grandmother for something she had done. And I think there's a protective aspect to all this. So we'll have to wait to find that out. But it tells you a lot about the people they are. I think Mello was also, we can say, a kind of a rescue for Edda. So, and then obviously they go to the waterfall. And Edda was, I think, throughout, you know, this whole thing, she was very childlike about the whole thing. There's this excitement with her, which Sirkin really enjoys, her own excitement, a childlike enthusiasm for everything she's seeing. And she keeps saying that this is the best night of her life. And I, you know, for someone she professes to hate, that is not what you tell your companion. So that was very nice. So, and then they move on to the waterfall, obviously.
But first, so I just, please give us some mythology here. Like, I know they saw the Perseids, the meteor shower, which apparently goes from July 17 to August 24 and hits the peak around 12 to 13th August, right? So, apparently...
Was it a real meteor shower though?
Perseids. It happens every year. It's apparently very famous with all these meteor shower watchers.
Really?
So, yeah, okay. It hails from the constellation Perseus. And apparently, I just wanted to say these things. It's the mythology related to it is, there are three types of mythologies, the stories. The first one is Perseus beheaded Medusa and then married Andromeda, and all his kids were called Perseids. That is where the meteor showers happen. Then we have Perseus, the god of God, who ejaculates on the lands every year.
Ejaculates on the land, okay.
For the fertility.
I love the Greeks. Of course, it's all for the fertility.
Yes, it's always the fertility with these gods. So that's the, and there is a very notion that, you know, lovers actually go to this site to, you know, discover these meteor showers. So they were very lucky to shoot that scene during that Perseids meteor shower, which is very, very rare because it happens all from apparently a month like long, but it's very difficult to catch it at the temple, and they caught it on 2 days, 12th and
I'm impressed because I legit thought that it was special effects because
no, it was real, it happens all the time there, like every year, so it was real. They actually shot it, and the series they saw, that was also real. So that's the beauty of that scene. It was not CGI. It was not something they created. So I'm very impressed that they actually managed to get it. And because apparently the local myth is that only lovers see it at that temple and during the night. So I don't. It's a great throwaway from that scene. I really like that they, you know, stick with these stars and all these notions with Sirkin and Edda, because her last name means star and he's obsessed with stars, and the way they try to bring that in loop it.
Yeah, they have been leaving these motifs throughout all the episodes, right? The stars, the flowers, those are very important throughout.
And she made
And
a wish.
yeah.
And she made a wish. I really want
She
to talk
made
about that.
several wishes. She made
Yeah,
several
she made
wishes, but then she
several.
was
And we
worried none of
probably
them would
did
come true.
too. That's you know, that's kind of a thing I would do. Like I will make zillion wishes and then wonder which one will come and should I just stick with one? But
And then
that's
she actually asked him what was the better strategy to make a wish, like make the same wish several times or make several wishes. And he, I think he said variety is good.
Yeah,
So that was so.
that was very cute. And she said that she wants to be the best landscape designer, and he promises.
Yes.
And he promises something.
That was foreshadowing 101, wasn't it?
Number one. I would love if that happens. Like I would, but you know, this is TV land. We have no idea what will
Anything
happen.
can
Yeah, anything happens. But I mean, it's out there, and I would love to see if it happens.
I think
So,
this is the future most of the audience would, envisage for them, because that is, I mean, considering who these characters are and considering the fact that Edda has been stating expressly that that is her goal, her dream. We can see that the way they are now, there is that attraction, but they won't be happy till Edda manages to achieve that dream. Only when she achieves it will she be in a position of equality. Like there will be true equality between them, where that, that wound she has will be filled once she gets that degree and once she gets that
you need
success.
that suppression. You need that suppression, and you need her to move on. And
And you need that. So I think most of us would like to see that. It is, well, the I think the angst will be great when it comes, because
I can't
these
wait.
two have that kind of chemistry and the actors are doing great. So I think, yes, we are kind of looking forward to it. Let's see when that comes.
Anything
But for
else from
now,
this evening?
there
Anything
is a
else?
little bit, but I think we can, address that a little while later when we talk about all the, literary references that we have been getting. Not just in this episode, but in general, because last episode we did talk a bit about Pygmalion, and I saw some fandom discussions around that this time. So we will address that in a little bit, yeah.
And then
But
we
first
move
I
to
want to,
waterfalls.
yes, the waterfall. Although there was, it was firstly all the pretty, I mean, the blue and the green and these two, just dancing around in the water. Yeah, it was so beautiful. Oh my God. It was so
Firstly, he
beautiful.
can't refuse her anything. He's like a pigeon in her hand. Like she just needs to say please, please, and make those eyes, and he will just drop things and go with the flow. I mean,
You know
that's
what? I think in that
she's a
last
queen.
episode, that she is, we have acknowledged that already. But in the last episode where Serkan got so jealous when Edda was swimming with another man, I think he really more than made up for it in this episode. First swimming with her in the
Definitely.
sea, then the waterfall. Come on, that was great to watch. And this was so, short in such a poetic way, the views, the music,
Music, yeah.
it was so beautiful. And I think also interesting, because just before that they had talked about Apollo. Apollo had a thing for water nymphs. So in
Yes.
all his, yes, all the disturbing stories that we know about him, he dated a lot of water nymphs. So it was nice to see, they were like this Edda just inviting him into the water along with her. It was kind of a nice throwback, I felt. So that was so beautiful. And yeah, I don't think there was a deeper meaning or anything to the scene,
No,
but just the
it
sheer
was just poetic.
beauty of it.
Letting
Yeah.
these, yeah,
And
letting
it's like,
these.
I think there's a dreamlike enchantment about these two when they are in that, bubble of their own. When the Serkan's problems, his work problems, his family, Selene, these things are not intruding upon them. They have this really dreamlike bubble. Like we have seen it before, the night of the engagement when he showed her the stars. And I think after that episode, this is again, we are seeing that now. This whole waterfall, the swim they had, they
It
just
has become
forget.
a theme, right? Him showing her
It's
these
kind of
pretty
their thing.
things.
Yes, there's this beautiful enchantment around them because they are so content and they are so happy with each other. And that's the moment when you can see why they, where
Click.
that, connection there. Yeah, why they click. So that was really nice to watch.
And it's
And then,
interesting, he's letting her be, in his periphery in terms of what he likes. Like, he's sharing all these things, be it serious, be it, the stars and now these spots, these waterfalls, these
yes. And he
moments and
wanted
all.
to go alone. So you get the feeling
Yeah.
that he, whenever he has come here before clearly, and he has been to all these places alone. He has never had a companion to share it with. And now Edda sort of insinuates herself into that position with her puppy eyes. And then he discovers something new too. I don't think he has ever swum in those waters before, but he does that with her. So it's really nice. It's a really nice thing to
I think
see.
that scene made, like, even if the episode was shed, I would have just told you to
Yeah,
watch it
man,
for
yeah,
that
man.
scene
And I
because it
think
was so
things
beautiful.
like these, like, scenes like these kind of make up for the rest of the not so nice things that we have to watch.
Because these
So,
are difficult to shoot
these are very difficult to shoot, exactly.
and to get that kind of a synergy, that choreography, I remember asking you, how did they manage to, make it like this? Like, there were two souls dancing in that water. It was so beautiful the way they were swimming. And
Yeah.
you were like, are they going to kiss? Because there was this moment where they both come, and I'm like, okay, that is that a throwback to his last movie, his most popular show, or whatever? But no, they did that thing so beautifully. No, it was love. It was
Yeah.
dream, and
It was
it went.
the perfect romantic moment, I think. Even more
Yes.
romantic than I think the other great scene that we had. The obviously we have to talk about that grand gesture of circumference at the end.
Of
That
course.
was, yeah, that is the swoon worthy moment. I think the swooniest moment of the entire 5 episodes. That is, Sarkhan Bolat has never been this dashing before. So that was new, and man, what a gesture. Yeah. So for me, I guess the waterfall scene is more poetic because I like the whole quietude that came with it. But obviously that ending, we have to talk about the ending.
But it starts with the room, no? Again, like all the good scenes, it starts with the room. Because I think that they're both dressing up, and she is that the first time she has noticed his attraction? Like, he was shirtless in in that
She
waterfall scene.
has noticed, I think, No, but I think she was, I think it sort of crept up on her. She didn't, like, during the waterfall scene, I think she was also, there was this excitement of, getting into the water, experiencing
Yeah.
the place. But then after the day they had had, I think she had a bit of time to catch up with her emotions. And then just before that, he said, na, that he needed 5 minutes alone with Celine, which, whatever it was, I don't know why he thinks 5 minutes will do it, but okay, whatever. And
And
then when she was,
I don't even know why he even keeps saying that he needs to talk.
yeah,
Like,
it makes no
he
sense
can
to me.
simply call her at his place and they can have a talk and end this, right? But it's like a
Yeah.
reminder. He keeps reminding himself that
Yeah, it seems like it's more for, for keeping that
both of them.
bond intact between them than for the contract as such. So that is, like, this time he did not shout at her or be rude to her, but then he drew that boundary immediately when the real world intruded. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, I think she had had a bit of time to catch up to the entire day and her feelings, and that's when the attraction sort of hit her mostly.
And then Milo also asked her, no, like, how's it going? And that was an instant reaction that it's very hot, and it is hot. But I also like that he keeps on complimenting her again and again in such an honest manner.
Yeah,
He
he
doesn't
has confidence in
hide.
her abilities and her talent, and I think the
And
confidence
her
and height,
beauty.
he means that, and she can see he means that. He's not just saying that to make her feel better. He actually means it because he's not a man. She knows that he's not the type of man who will, give platitudes. He means whatever he says. He's a man of his word. So I think she really, that is probably the most valuable thing to her, that he sees her, sees what she wants to show the world, what she can do. That is very, very important for Edda. And then obviously what came after that. What did you think of that whole grand gesture of carrying her off to sea?
I love that it happened, that, you know, it was a contrast to the previous one. But I don't get it. What was happening? Like, she was going to save him by, you know, by accepting whatever the press was saying. I didn't really get
what Celine was trying to do. I mean, maybe it was the translation, because it was not very clear what Celine asked her to go out and do there.
Yeah.
But whatever it was, I think, you know, the big payoff was meant to be like, this time he fulfills her dream, like with the old couple, you know, that whole segue we got with the older couple. And like I said at the beginning, the theme of this episode seems to be the possibilities of Edda and Serkan's future, and the old couple were the future personified, right? It was very obvious, for they said it multiple times that this is what they could be. Yeah, they themselves said it. And so it was interesting.
She mentioned that dream,
and they, you know, had a whole throwback. The dialogues were playing in the background while he actually lifted her up in his arms and carried her off. So that was a huge, I think, for someone like Serkan especially, it is a very huge gesture to, you know, do something like that, to give up something he has worked towards, something which is very important to him, and rescue Edda from... they were both trying to rescue each other. Although I think Serkan's action made much more sense here. There was really... I mean, I don't know what Edda would have actually accomplished by talking to the packs.
Yeah, that's the reason. I was like, what were they trying to accomplish by letting her go?
I mean, the whole scene itself was so swoon-worthy. So you funny. Kind of forget all about it.
And you can see why someone like Edda will fall for Serkan, you know? Yeah. At that... doing that, leaving his award ceremony and just, you know, sharing, taking her hand and, you know, just sailing across the sea and whatever.
It was so romantic, and you can see it in her eyes that she is kind of amazed and proud of him in a way, that he, you know, did this impulsive thing just for her, because it is an impulse. It was an impulsive reaction. He didn't have time to think it over at all. He must have... We see him just step into the frame from behind her, but clearly when she started walking towards the media, he clearly must have jumped off the stage and come after her. So that was an impulsive reaction, and for someone like Serkan, that is a huge thing. And the whole, you know, way it was shot, the cinematography of the scene, the, you know, they were on this boat and they were sailing towards the setting sun. I think it was even more poignant because they did talk about Apollo in the temple scene, the sun, who is the sun god. So it was very telling. I think the motifs and everything connected nicely. And also the sun is a star. Stars are their thing. So it all came together nicely at the end. So I guess all in all, it was a very enjoyable episode for me, because I tend to ignore the parts I don't like. The good things more than made up for it, I guess.
Yeah, because we got mythology to play this across, and it made sense that they... You can see, you know, this writer is very famous for using all these symbols, mythology, and literature. Yeah, and it plays around in all the episodes. I really like that she's trying to, you know, connect the two worlds. Sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's not, but here it is connecting, and you can see by the end of the episode that, you know, everything she tried to connect, it connected, and it was great. I mean, it's very dreamy in the last scene, but I also had this fear that, you know, this is too good to be true. You're not getting anything out of this, obviously, because this the series is so early in the whole run. Also, you know, it was so dreamy. I felt Serkan is going to say something, and this is going to, you know, again start from the ground zero. This is, if the series was ending, this was your big ending. But it is not.
That it felt like, you know, a kind of like a way a season should have ended, or, you know, series should have ended, rather than, you know, we are just into episode 5 and it the whole thing just seems too grand to be, you know, just an episode ending. But let's see how they begin from the next episode, because the promo, I didn't really get anything out of the one promo that they have released. So
that's my philosophy with Turk Disease. Don't care for the promos. They might be hot, they might be cool, they might just don't pay
but they're extremely misleading. Exactly.
Yeah, they're misleading.
So we don't really want to talk about the promo, I guess. So,
but I want to talk about the story and the literature references. You promised us all those goodies in the last podcast, so please.
I mean, those are not goodies, but okay, we'll do that this time, because like I said, she did drop a lot of literary references in this episode, and I came across some discussion in the fandom. You showed me the discussion about the Pygmalion tweets.
Yes.
So apparently the writer, this is a screenplay writer, I say, right? She had, come across it in an article before, but she also tweeted about the Pygmalion inspiration for this show. And these tweets were from May, the tweets that you had showed me. And I think the fandom were discussing it recently. So we did see that discussion. First I'll just talk about, you know, the references we got in this episode. Apollo, the Apollo myths. So like I said, she had combined Greek myths, let's be honest, are not exactly romantic. No. The mythology, oh my god, no. They're either scary violent, or the, you know, the love stories are just tragic. There are very few happy endings I can think of. Maybe Eros and Psyche, but even that is a pretty violent story. But the Apollo myth, the story that Edda narrated, is not really the common version. I think she mixed a couple of different stories to get that, which is fine. The most common one is Apollo and Daphne, where, you know, Apollo falls in love at first sight with this nymph and then pursues her, and she's terrified of him. This is a very rapey story, just to warn our readers who might want to look it up. So he pursues her, and then she's so terrified of him catching up that she begs her father to turn her into a shrub. So she becomes a laurel tree, and Apollo still does not leave her alone. The laurel wreath becomes his symbol. And the other one, I think, the translation that I saw, the subtitles that I saw, said the flower that Edda mentions in a story, the flower that this woman turns into, it's a sunflower who turns towards the sun. So Apollo also has a sunflower myth, that there was this other nymph who was in love with Apollo, and Apollo did not return her affections. A lot of shit goes down, as it happens in Greek mythology. And then basically the nymph turns herself into a sunflower out of her immense adoration and loyalty. So I think these two, she took some elements from some of the different bits and turned them into a really romantic bit for Edda and Serkan. But we're talking about myths also. Pygmalion is another Greek myth. So because the writer mentioned that, so there are various types of Pygmalion, right? There's the Greek myth, then there's the Bernard Shaw play, and then there's the movie. It's basically the same story, but obviously things have been changed and there are other tweaks and adaptations. So I think the larger point, because I saw the fandom discussions, people were freaking out a bit about, you know, the foreshadowing.
Yeah,
the angst that you're about to see, the separation. So
there's no sad ending having here. You know, there's no, I doubt there is going to be sad ending.
See, technically, see, if we are going to be literal about it, all the, you know, inspirations for the stories, the references we got, the Apollo myths, Pygmalion, they all are sad. They all have sad endings, because that is the nature of mythological stories. They don't really end well, especially if it's a love story. So if we are going to be literal about it, I think the larger point, when I read the writer's tweets, I just felt like she was trying to make a larger point that you can have the same tropes in many different stories. You can have the same story, in fact. But elements, you can change the elements and make them all so different from each other that they will be charming on their own. I think that was kind of probably what she was trying to say. These are all inspirations, and I think we should just leave them at that. That okay, there just, are the stars, yeah, they are the myths, yeah, that we have.
She's trying to make them very dreamy in terms of, you know, story, as a story and characters. So she's drawing all these references.
And also these are all very familiar stories to us. So these are the kind of things that, you know, reels your audience in. We know the story. We were told expressly this, you know, we were told clearly in Edda's story, we saw what happened, that the god leaves her because, you know, he is immortal. He is beyond her reach. They are meant to be separated, and she, still knowing that it is hopeless, she waits for him. So these are all familiar stories to us, and that is the promise of getting that, is, you know, keeping us hooked. So let's just treat it as that and see what other things the show has to offer, how it changes around, how it dances around those tropes.
I am actually in team separation because I want to see that happen. I mean, obviously,
yeah, I guess we all want to see that happen. Yeah,
It would be fun. And what other references can we? Pride and Prejudice is obviously there, but it was fun how she used that literary reference from the play and the movie and the Greeks. I really like that she tried to do that in this episode and tried to lay it down, and she used the perfect place to do it. Siddhi and that temple, Pulu temple, the waterfalls. So poetic. That episode was poetic. Not for, you know, some other issues which we have talked about.
Yeah, so that's what I like. That, like, episode 4 was, like I told you when I watched it, it was such a perfect rom-com episode, you know, with a dash of everything we like and like to watch in a good rom-com. So this one was a more dreamy, romantic kind of episode. So we can, it's good to have both kinds, and it's good to see what a writer can do with
the promise of what these two can have if they let go of their, you know, if they let go of their inhibitions and their fears and just accept what they feel for each other. But it is, you know, a fantasy, basically. This episode was a fantasy.
There are a lot of elements, fairy tales, mythology. So we can all, you know, enjoy the references and enjoy the stories that come along. But the main thing is to, I guess, enjoy the show without worrying too much about the ending. We don't know how long we are here for. So anyway, speaking of which, we thought of doing a special segment for the listeners today, because last time we talked a bit about the food that we got to see in the episode, and a lot of people told us that they liked it. So we thought, we got a lot of amazing outfits in this episode.
The fashion, yes.
Firstly, so we thought we'll just do,
I'll just give a quick shout out to Hande Urchel's Closet. That's an Instagram, and you can all see the clothes with details from where to buy and all these accessories.
What's the handle?
Hande Urchel's Closet. Okay, that's the name of the handle. And, you know, all these high street brands, the clothes are curated from all these brands, not your, obviously, the French luxury houses. But what I really like are the it pieces, be it the small bags, the micro bags, which were having a moment in 2019 and in 2020 as well. Big straw hats and turquoise, the classic blue, the Pantone color. I really loved the accessories in this episode, especially, you know, be the glares. I think she was wearing one from Moshi Minor. I don't remember. There was this beaded glares. It was really beautiful. Which was your favorite outfit, Fox? This is your new area of expertise.
I was just listening very carefully, and I have no idea what you just talked about.
I actually like Celine's costumes, except that her sizes, shoes are there. If they can, you know, fix that, her outfits were really nice.
And she has, like, the actress has a really statuesque face and figure, right? Like, she looks amazing in some of these flowing gowns and everything. I also like how she's dressed, but then I can just say I like and dislike. I don't really notice beyond that.
Which was your favorite one?
The
Oh,
jumpsuit. My favorite, yes. Oh my God, the jumpsuit would be a favorite. I mean, I loved her red dress too, but then that is not something that a lot of
That's
us
a
can
very
carry on. The color
prom
was
dress type, yeah.
amazing. Yeah, the color and the styling was amazing, but I
Yeah.
guess the jumpsuit would be my favorite. It was wonderful. I would
Yeah.
have liked to see that white one-shouldered, I think it was a skirt. I don't know whether it was the one they had for the evening dinner with the
Oh
older
yeah,
couple.
it's a dress. It's a
It
dress.
looked okay. It's a dress. I
It has
didn't
a
get to
cutout
see all of
dress.
it.
Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
cutout dress. It was
Okay.
very beautiful. Like you need to be really, really fit like her to get into that dress. But it was really, you know what I really like about the style? Like each character you can make out from their clothes from where they come from. Like Edda is someone who you will find, you know, wearing shorts and tees and flip-flops. She's casual in her approach, and it shows in her clothes that she will just simply pull things up and, you know, be this stunning
She
self.
dresses
All her,
for her comfort.
yeah,
Yeah.
and you know, she's the main thing. Like clothes don't wear her, she wears them. That's the thing. Whereas for Celine, you can see that she matches her earrings well with her dresses. You know, she wore you know, Tonga style gown and the flowing gown. That was I think a Gucci, badly done Gucci remake, if I'm not
Okay.
wrong. Yeah, I think that Gucci
What
was
were
hot
the earrings
during
you
those
rip-offs of? You saw,
2000.
you said it was, you know, feathers and all
Yeah,
represented
but this
nobility
one,
and something. Yeah.
yeah, but it was like you are just stepping into the hotel. You don't expect to wear such a dress, and she was wearing that and the. And those accessories, even the other girl, who, I don't remember her name. I'm so bad with names.
Piril,
Piril, right?
Piril. The
Piril,
character's
Piril.
name is, yeah.
She was wearing stunning outfits as well. I mean, the
Yeah,
whole
all of them, all
cast.
of them,
Yeah, but
yeah.
it's very, the person who's styling them is very in tune with the characters, as well as from where to source them. You can see the effort. It's
Yeah.
lovely when someone puts
Yeah, and
these
it's a
kind of.
great treat for the eyes. I mean, this entire episode, that's, I guess, the one thing you can take away from this episode. It was a treat for the eyes in every way possible, with
Yeah,
clothes, without
it's
clothes. We got to see all of
hotcakes.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, all of it, and for the
We are
mind as
trying
well.
to keep things decent here, so we will not.
Yes, I am. We are not going to comment the boys, but please come on. Let me circle. You know, comment on our clothes. Like, okay, you can wear these and dress
I
like
think
this, and
he
he's
is
wearing polo
gonna be
shirts.
boring, and yeah, he's like, he has a
Oh
really boring wardrobe, and I think that's what the character
my
is
God.
supposed to represent. And also
Yeah.
interesting that he no wore a suit for what, one episode? That is, I think,
Yeah.
the shortest time for which I've seen a male lead wear a suit, which is hilarious to me. And then he is permanently in those, you know, two or three
Can they put
polos
him in
that he
those
has.
button-down shirts? Like,
I
please, the
yeah,
button.
just put him
The
in
white one
shirt,
was so
like, yeah.
nice. The white one was so
Yeah,
nice.
I liked his, like, he had a good wardrobe this episode. Some of the casual linen pants and open-necked shirts that he did, that was nice.
It was
And
nice.
like, Kerem really carries them off well,
Yeah.
so that was good to watch. And by the way, we have to give a shout out to the, you know, listener for whom we decided to do this
Have to
segment.
do this fashion one. Like I promise that we will do it. Thank you for, you know, your suggestions and keep sending them to us. We'll try to include as many as possible.
If the
And I'm
episode has
talking.
enough material, of course, provided.
Yes.
Let's keep
And
our
please tell
fingers
us what you
crossed for
think
that.
about the mythology as well and
Yes, please
literature.
leave us comments on the Twitter
Yeah.
handle, and here if you want. I think there's a voice message feature here. We just figured that out, by the way, so please feel free
Yeah.
to leave us any kind of feedback, critical, positive, negative, whatever. We would love to hear from you. So, yeah. That's it,
Till
I
the
think, for
next
today.
time, yes, till next
Yes.
episodes.
See you for
Hopefully
the
we'll
next
see you
episode.
as well.
Hopefully, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Ta-da.
Bye bye.